Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo, working on the Pathfinder Lost Omen line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, written for dozens of Pathfinder products, and I also write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I've been playing for almost 20 years. I write the Dear Dova Queen Advice column and the Bend the Knee blogs here on No Direction. You can also watch me play in the Adventurous, Stellar, Fall of Plaguestone, and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about the Rogue.
Now, before we get started, we just want to say that just because we know a lot of what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to just offer advice, and you can use that how you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
They're sneaky, they're sly, and they rely on their wits to survive. The Rogue is a class that can effectively do it all to some degree. They got scouting, they got utility. Some of them can off-tank, but almost every rogue, big DPS.
Hey, what's DPS for people who might not know what that is?
Damage per second. It's not really something that applies in tabletop role-playing games like Pathfinder, but it's just a common term that we stole from video games.
Yeah, rogues, big damage a lot of the time, alongside the likes of Fighter and Barbarian. They can get up there with their damage numbers. So that's really the big thing. But also, yeah, lots of skills they can do. They have so many skills that they can kind of just fill in whatever other role you really need.
Some common examples of rogues from pop culture might include, let me think about this, literally any assassin from movies or video games. Oh, what about Han Solo? Or one of my personal favorites, Chris Pratt as Star-Lord. How about James freaking Bond? Indiana Jones? Well, maybe just Harrison Ford in general when you think about it. Laura Croft or Captain Mal Reynolds for those fans out there.
Anyone who's particularly clever and still able to put up a good fight really is... could be classified as some kind of rogue out there.
In Pathfinder, almost everyone can find disarmed traps. So the rogue's stereotype of, hey, get up there and find traps, isn't really the standard anymore. But rogues do have the trap finder feat. So with that, they can do it better. And they have mad DPS because of their sneak attack. Based on your builds, you could debuff with Intimidation to provide support to your party. You have all kinds of other mechanics. You have crazy high mobility. You can do some magic trickery, or you could focus really hard on that sweet, sweet sneak attack damage.
Yeah, rogues in Pathfinder in particular kind of continue the same idea that they've had in previous editions where they are the flexible damage person. They can kind of be in and out of combat whenever they need. And when they get in there, if everything goes just the way the rogue wants, which usually the rogues have the skills to make sure things go their way, they just crank out so much damage. Unlike someone like the fighter who can consistently stay in combat and deal consistent damage, the rogue has to constantly keep up with what's going on in the battle. But doing so rewards you with things like great damage or interesting debilitations and things like that.
So, let me ask you, Luis, how does the rogue fit the Batman test?
Oh boy, if there were one class that I'd have to choose to be Batman, I think rogue is probably the closest you can do, at least out of the core classes, because it's all about being ready for anything and being able to know everything that you're going up to face. So the rogue is a master of skills, so they will know lots of knowledge. You can take all of the different knowledge related skills like arcana and nature, occultism, religion, or all the lores that you want to prepare yourself for combat or even mid combat recall knowledge about stuff that you need to know. You can open up doors either through athletics or through thievery, however you want. You can disable traps. You can do so much stuff. And then in combat, you're also a pretty good combatant. So it's pretty much the jack of all trades, but it's like an above average jack of all trades in all things by default. And then you kind of specialize in what you want. And Batman can kind of do everything because he's had training and prepared for everything.
So let's talk about the crunchy stuff. The key ability for rogues is typically going to be dexterity, but for ruffian builds, it might be strength. You have 8 hit points plus your constitution modifier.
So you start with expert perception. You are always kind of ready to keep an eye out for traps or ambushes or things like that. Or it also helps you to, you know, while you're hiding and keeping an eye on people, to watch them better. In addition, your saving throws are, you have trained in fortitude and you're an expert in reflex and will. You are typically pretty agile as a rogue and your mind is quite slippery.
You are trained in stealth. You're trained in one or more skills determined by your racket, which we'll talk about very soon. And you get another number of additional skills equal to 7. Plus your intelligence modifier. You get so many skills. You can do everything that you want to do.
It is absolutely absurd how many skills you get. I have a player in one of my Ruins of Azalant game that is playing a rogue. And he has, I guess, just checked off every box for every skill at this point and is training everything because, like, I guess I am. There's too many skills that I get at this point.
One of my favorite things about the rogue is that while you are trained in simple weapons and not, quote-unquote, trained in martial weapons, you do have a select few martial weapons that are just added to your trained list. So you already have a rapier, which is arguably one of the best rogue weapons. Also, you get trained in sap, short bow, and short sword, which is another one of the prototypical rogue weapons.
And finally, wrapping up that, we have your defenses, which says you're trained in light armor or unarmored defense. Most rogues are expected to be pretty nimble and probably have high dexterity. So light armor is probably all you need. And you're, of course, trained in your rogue class DC.
Now, the rogue racket is where you kind of decide the direction that you want to go with the rogue. You've got 3 options. You've got the ruffian, where you're a brute and you intimidate people and you're trained in intimidation and your key ability score could be strength if you wanted it to be. You don't have to, though. And in addition to that, you get medium armor proficiencies, so you're a little bit of a beefier rogue.
And the most interesting part of the ruffian is your sneak attack, which we'll talk about in a second, is more available to you than it is for the other different rackets. Normally, sneak attack requires very specific types of weapons, like an agile or finesse weapon. But ruffian says you can choose any simple weapon you want, regardless of the traits. So if you wanted to start sneak attacking with a long spear, for example, you could, just because you're that good at it.
One of the other rackets is Scoundrel. This is your Han Solo type rogue. You're fast talking, you use flattery, and you have a silver tongue. That's taken straight from the core rulebook, by the way. When you successfully feint, the target is flat-footed against melee attacks you attempt until the end of your next turn. You're trained in deception and diplomacy, and if you want to, you can choose charisma as your key ability score.
And the final racket, which is probably the most iconic style of rogue, is the thief racket. You are stealthy, you are agile, you're completely unnoticed when you move around, you're the pickpocket, all that kind of stuff. This doesn't have a different option for your key ability score because it's assuming you're going to use dexterity already. But you can use your dexterity in place of your strength modifier when attacking with finesse weapons. So you don't have to rely on strength at all. It's all about your precision and your agility to fight in combat.
And let me just add that when you're using your dexterity instead of your strength, that's also going to your damage rolls as well. So this is really one way to start cranking out the high numbers against the evil bad guys.
So next up we have probably the most iconic class feature of the rogue, the sneak attack, which is representing you getting one up on your enemies. They might be unaware of you entirely because you're hidden, or you might have juked them off to the left and then get them with the right with your feint. Whatever the case might be, you catch them off guard and you get to deal extra damage if you strike a creature that has the flat-footed condition and you are wielding an agile or finesse melee weapon, an agile or finesse unarmed attack with your strike, or if you're striking with a ranged weapon attack, you deal extra precision damage. That starts off at 1d6 and eventually goes up to a total of 4d6 over your career. And as long as you're meeting those qualifications, let's say I'm attacking with a rapier and I'm attacking a flat-footed opponent because they're flanked, for example, I could just keep striking, and if I keep hitting, it's extra damage every single time.
Now, for that ranged attack, if it's thrown, it does have to also be agile or finesse, which is something I frequently forget about.
And as I mentioned earlier, if you happen to be a ruffian, that agile or finesse prerequisite can drop a little bit to any simple weapon. It just really depends on how you want to fight.
Yeah. Another thing that the rogue just starts out of the gate, is surprise attack. If you are rolling deception or stealth for initiative, the creatures that haven't acted yet are automatically flat-footed. No tactical positioning required.
You just run in and start beating up because you jumped out of stealth, for example. After that, you know, you get your feats and skill feats. And here's the interesting thing about rogue skill feats. Normally, you get a skill feat every other level, every even level or so. With the rogue, you get one starting at first level, and then just every level you get a skill feat. You are going to be overloaded with skill feats by the time you're done playing the rogue. And complementing all your skill feats are your skill increases. Normally you would get a skill increase at third level and then every two levels after that. The rogue, as we mentioned, is very skillful, starting at second level, and then just every level from then on can increase a skill from trained up to expert and then so on to master and legendary eventually, to by the end of the career have a potential of 5 different legendary skills compared to 3 for all the other classes.
At third level, you're going to pick up deny advantage. So you aren't flat-footed to creatures that have been hiding or that are flanking you if they are your level or lower.
At fifth level, we pick up weapon tricks, which increases your proficiency to expert for simple weapons plus all your cool rogue weapons. In addition, when you critically succeed at an attack roll against someone who's flat-footed using an agile or finesse simple weapon or any of your cool rogue weapons, you can apply your critical specialization effect. So you can use your swords to trip people or your knives to cause bleeding.
The classic rogue evasion is at 7th level. You increase your reflex saves to master, and when you roll success, boom, critical success instead.
In addition, 7th level also gets you your proficiency for perception to increase to master with vigilant senses, and you gain weapon specialization, which just adds an extra bit of damage with all of your weapons that you're either an expert or trained with.
So most of the things in these class features is pretty run-of-the-mill. Increases here, extra successes there. But something unique to the rogues is at 9th level, you pick up debilitating strike, where you can use your reaction after you have hit a flat-footed creature to deal damage, and suddenly you're giving them either enfeebled 1, or a minus 10-foot status penalty to its speed. And later, you can add other debilitations to your list, so you can start debuffing your targets in the manner that you see fit.
What's even better is it's not a reaction. It's a free action.
Oh.
So if you happen to get a sneak attack twice in the same turn, you can apply both of the debilitations. Every time you meet the trigger, which is basically when you get a sneak attack, you get to apply a debilitation. So if things are going pretty bad for the bad guy, they might have two, three, four debilitations on them all at once from just one round of attacks.
At 9th level, your proficiency in fortitude saves goes to expert. At 11th level, your proficiency for rogue class DC increases to expert. Right now, I don't think that's used for anything, but maybe later.
At 13th level, it's improved evasion. Your proficiency for reflex saves increases to legendary. In addition, if you succeed at a reflex save, you just automatically get it upgraded to a critical success. That's how all the other save increases work. When you get a critical failure on a reflex save, you get a failure instead. And if you get a failure, you just take half damage.
I love that. Half damage on failures. If you get a success, it's a critical success. Nobody is pinning down this rogue. At 13th level, you become legendary in perceptions. Nobody escapes your gaze. Also at 13th level, your proficiency with light armor and unarmored defense increases to expert. It takes until 13th level to get your armor saves to expert. So please don't plan on being a main tank with the rogue.
13th level also increases your proficiency with your simple weapons and your cool rogue weapons all the way up to master. And then 15th level, your debilitating strike, if you meet the trigger, you can apply two debilitations at once, which again can stack on lots of debuffs really quickly if things are going well for you.
Also at 15th level, greater weapon specialization, you're doing an extra 4 damage with all your weapons. And at 17th level, you get slippery mind, so your proficiency with will saves goes to master. And again, when you get a success in a will save, it is now a critical success.
19th level brings light armor mastery, which increases your light armor and unarmored defenses up to master. And 19th level also brings in one last class feature, your master strike, which is a free action that you can apply basically anytime you could apply a debilitating strike, which is basically anytime you get a sneak attack. But you have the target attempt a fortitude save against your class DC, and depending on how things go, they become enfeebled, or they might become paralyzed for quite a while, or if you want, you can just outright knock them out, knock them unconscious, or straight up kill them.
Now, to talk about the rogue, we have some builds here that we would like to go over with you. And for mine, I have chosen one of my favorite rogue characters that I almost never get to play. I've played her like 3 different times in 3 different campaigns that just keep ending. So one of these days, I'll get to keep Jessie Nash. She's a crime boss who organizes a whole gang of ruffians to do what she needs to do. She's a cold-hearted murderer stalking her quarry in dark alleys, and a major drama queen based on the fact that when a target is running away from her, she likes to pull out her ukulele and sing upbeat songs in a strangely angelic voice. She loves children and loves family, but despite that, is still chaotic evil to the core. So for Jessie, I'm picking a human, no multiclassing. She's a pure rogue at heart. A lot of fear-based in her role-playing, but not a lot of fear-based class features. And she's always got max ranks in performance. So that means my skill increases are always going to first go to performance, because that's how she liked to do. And let's see. What she's going to be using is one dagger at a time, because they're very concealable, and she's going to have a lot of other daggers hidden on her person. At first level, as an ambitious human, she's taking nimble dodge, and you're next. That way she can jump out of the way of an attack that looks particularly vicious, and she's going to be able to kind of let somebody else know, I'm coming for you, after she's downed their ally. Gives you that little bit of extra demoralize after you've downed someone. She's taking quick draw for hidden daggers, And then at fourth level, I'm going back to second level feats and grabbing mobility. That way she's got that high mobility focus that I'm looking for. Easy to get away from the fighter when they don't get the chance to attack of opportunity you. At sixth level, I'm taking Skirmish Strike. This lets me step and then strike, or strike and then step. At 8th level, I'm going back to 6 levels again and taking Gang Up, because as a crime boss, she's always going to be fighting with her boys, and this makes it easier to get your sneak attacks out there. And at 10th level, I'm adding more things to my debilitation list. With precise debilitations, I get the target becomes flat-footed when I sneak attack, or, and this is my favorite one, the target takes an extra 2d6 precision damage from your attacks. This is the big deeps.
So I chose the other route rather than being all finesse. I'm just a big brute. I chose the Ruffian Racket, which focuses on strength, much like we did with our fighter thing. I'm doing the strength build, which is fine by me, because beating up guys is totally within my wheelhouse. Ruffian lets you choose strength as your key ability score, and we're going to do that. And there's a few different ways you can build this character. It comes down to what kind of weapons you want to fight with. If you want to sneak attack, which is usually the big thing you want to do with the rogue, you want to make sure you have either a simple weapon as a ruffian or an agile or finesse weapon, which agile or finesse melee weapon doesn't specify it has to be specifically simple. So you can choose any agile or finesseable melee weapon so long as it has those, either of those traits. It doesn't have to be both. So I looked through the list and I found one that I liked, and I decided I'm going to go half orc so then I can get the orc knuckle daggers, which are basically they're just brass knuckles with like a knife on the side, which is great. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick half orc as our ancestry. You can end up doing this kind of thing with anyone, like I said, just find the right weapon for you, but I'm going half orc. So then as my first level ancestry feat, I can end up taking the orc weapon familiarity, which gives me access to all uncommon orc weapons, like the orc knuckle daggers, and lets me treat any martial orc weapons, like the orc knuckle daggers, as simple weapons. So my proficiency will increase with those alongside all of my other simple weapons. I don't have to worry about it falling behind because it's a quote-unquote stronger weapon than a simple weapon. So, cool. I'm going to fight with orc knuckle daggers. I'm a half-orc. What am I going to take as a rogue? Well, I'm going to take for my first level feat, Twin Feint, which is just a 1-2 punch. You attack twice, once with a weapon in each hand, and the second time the target is flat-footed against the attack. It really makes a nice visual of having a knuckle dagger on each hand and just beating up guys. I kind of imagine this as a maybe bouncer style or a goon type. You can make them into a very honorable pugilist, if you like, whatever the case might be. He punches with two hands. Now, second level, I'm going to take Brutal Beating, which says whenever I strike and get a critical hit that deals damage, the target becomes frightened one, which leans into the other big thing I want to do here, which is focus on intimidation. Taking the Ruffian Racket gives me the intimidation skill as a trained skill. I'm going to lean into that. Let's go full intimidation. At second level, when I take my skill feat, I'm going to take Intimidating Prowess, which says you get a +1 circumstance bonus because you're strong. If you have at least a 16 strength, I believe, you can take this feat and just get +1. And eventually, once your strength kicks up to 20 or higher, that +1 becomes a +2 just because you're so big and strong and scary. Obviously, all of the other skill feats are going to focus on the intimidation stuff, so I can do Intimidating Glare and Quick Coercion and things like that. Eventually, at 15th level, maybe scare someone to death. But the point is, we're big, we're strong, we're going to be scary. Let's lean into it entirely. Brutal Beating helps out with that. And at 4th level, I'm going to take Dread Striker, which calls out that anyone that is frightened also is flat-footed against your attacks. So if you demoralize people and frighten them, or you happen to get a critical hit and use brutal beating to make them frightened, it's a lot easier to keep beating up on them because they're now flat-footed. As my fifth level ancestry feat, I'm going to take the human part to take natural ambition and grab your next. It just leans more into that intimidation stuff. Knock a guy out, give another one the stink eye, scare them, freak them out. Sixth level is really dealer's choice. You could go with gang up if you have enough other melee combatants around to help you with flanks and stuff. That way you don't have to position as precisely, and it'll let you keep beating people up. I, in particular, would just take quick draw because I think it's really nice to have no weapons in hand when you start a combat. So, you know, if you need to get around a noble's house or, you know, the big banquet or whatever, you don't have to keep your weapons on hand, and then just use quick draw to immediately put on one of your knuckle daggers and then make a strike with it. And you can quick draw multiple times so you can get all your weapons out right away on the first round of combat. Eighth level, we're going to go with opportune backstab. I'm going to assume we're fighting with friends, and if a friend attacks an enemy and I'm also right next to the enemy, I can use my reaction to beat them up, which is even better if they're already flat-footed because of the flank or other circumstance. It works really well with teamwork tactics. Ninth level for your ancestry feat. I was thinking this guy is more kind of a goon style, more of a comic book cartoon movie villain goon that happens to be able to do any job that the boss needs for them. It's a clever improviser, works well for that. You could also take pervasive superstition to help out with saves against magic and things like that. Really up to you. Finally, 10th level, I'm going to take vicious debilitations, which lets me provide a weakness of my choice, bludgeoning, piercing, or slashing, probably piercing because of my knuckle daggers, and also lets me provide the clumsy condition as one of the debilitations. Clumsy will just reduce their AC even further and make it even easier to keep beating them up. Both of those debilitations just make your punches even better. So, all in all, punch a bunch of guys, scare them half to death, and kick him out of your bar.
So you've heard us talk about all of the things that the rogue can do, but now it's the time to answer some questions from you. And from user Dom, we have, do you consider the rogue a melee class? What do you think is the most effective way to use the rogue using the new 3-action system and the rogue's unique class features such as sneak attack?
So I think by default, because Pathfinder is a cooperative game and the way combat tends to work with most people in melee, the rogue ends up being a melee class. They tend to favor melee at the very least, because you will need allies to flank to give you the opportunity to sneak attack and things like that, and most monsters will run up to you because they don't have ranged attacks, so you're going to end up in melee either way. But there's a few different ways you can use the 3-action economy. One thing I thought of is maybe making a quote-unquote sniper, where you fight with ranged weapons and you can use your sneak attack with your ranged weapons as long as you meet the prerequisites of, you know, the person being flat-footed or unaware of you. So you can use hiding, you can stealth in combat, hide behind a rock and just keep popping up and shooting arrows to get that sneak attack. Another thing you can do is kind of like what I did with my build, is use some of your extra actions instead of relying on your third attack at the -8 or -10 penalty. Maybe you'll just go in for a feint to set yourself up for next round, or demoralize to make it easier for everyone else to attack your enemy. Next question is from user Nicole, who asks, with a new action economy in 2E, and enemies generally having higher to hit bonuses, standing in front of baddies can lead you to going down in one round. When playing rogues, what are some good encounter strategies you might have to do effective damage while making sure you don't fall unconscious, especially considering a lot of rogues might use things like Twin Feint, which uses up two of your actions?
Well, I think rogues using Twin Feint are simply going to have to be aware that if you move first and then use Twin Feint, you're still going to be in melee range after you've hit. And I mean, I get that it's a high risk, high reward playstyle in action. So if you're going to go that route, you're just going to have to be prepared to take a hit or two maybe buff con, maybe multi-class into one of the classes that'll give you some spells so you can take AC buffs. Take mobility so that next round it's easier to get back out of combat after you've done your twin feint again.
Another thing you can do is rely on your friends. If you have a spellcaster in the party, maybe ask them for buffs in advance. Maybe something like blur or displacement will help you out a bit, or you know, even some extra temporary hit points will help out. If you have a champion in your party, standing right next to them means they can help you out with their reactions and reduce damage for you, or maybe shield block for you. So don't forget that you're not in this alone.
From patron Jaina B, using the options we have now, how would you make a rogue into a shadow dancer?
I think it's unfortunately not as simple as we would like. Unlike first edition with the core rulebook, where you could just take the shadow dancer prestige class, there's no archetype for that. So I think the best bet is to kind of fake it, either through using things like your ancestry feats to get you some extra spell casting, and then using the rogue's minor magic and what's the other option? Their trickster's ace to get you a casting of a spell. But I think Lauren probably has a better idea of multi-classing for that.
I sure do like multi-classing for a lot of these ideas where you're trying to, where you have a concept in your head that's a little bit unique. I think multi-classing helps a lot. And for a shadow dancer, you could multi-class into, say, sorcerer. I would say wizard, but then you got to hold a book, and nobody wants to do that. So if you go sorcerer, you can start taking illusion spells, but you can theme them as shadowy. You can take ghost sound right at second level and then kind of play with the shadows, like make whispers come out of them. You can take illusory object or illusory disguise to make shadowy things come out and distract people. Illusory creature and mirror image are going to be good. Darkness. Shadow Dancer has always kind of just been an arcane trickster, but with shadow-focused themes.
Some more shadowy, weird, spooky stuff might also come with the bard, if you prefer, with the occult tradition. Or you can do an occult sorcerer. Either way, I think both of those are probably good options, especially because then you don't have to hold a book. Okay, so user The Joker Plays asks, how do you fulfill the thief fantasy for your player in a generally lawful good party? People want to make a rogue for that kind of Bilbo Baggins kind of roguery kind of thing without upsetting the rest of the party.
All right. Listen, for starters, I'm going to put a little bit of my own preference in here. Just don't play with lawful good characters. Lawful good is the worst. Paladins are like, I noticed that you wanted to steal that bread. I have to kill you now. I hate it so much. But back to the topic at hand. When you say the thief fantasy, I have to assume that you mean like stealing all the things, like some kind of like art robber. I will steal the Mona Lisa, or pickpocketing everyone you can. But both of those kind of lead to problems and is generally not a good play style. It frustrates your party, it gets you all in trouble, and it can be very disruptive. Instead, try staying hidden in combat until you can tiptoe up to the bad guy and just yank the long sword out of his belt. Or maybe consider different ways that you could steal something to resolve the party's current problems. If there's a new law in town that the mayor's drafted, maybe go steal that draft, you know? Maybe you need someone to lose their home. Go steal the deed.
Another thing to consider is lawful good doesn't mean you're the upright, outstanding police officer kind of person. Lawful includes things like personal codes or codes of honor, things like that. Unofficial, unwritten laws can be part of lawful in the lawful good. So in a way, if you think about it, Robin Hood and his merry men might be considered lawful good if their code of honor is steal from the rich to give to the poor and help out people, because that's the good thing to do. You might be able to play someone like Robin Hood, who only steals from evil characters, or, you know, from the to help out the more deserving people out there and still be considered lawful good. It would mean the rest of the party has to also play along with the code, but there's ways to do it, I think.
You're not even a little bit wrong about that. I think I've just developed a sour taste in my mouth for lawful good because I've played with too many people who play it as lawful stupid.
I think lawful good, a lot of people immediately default to thinking, oh, a paladin, so I always have to play like a paladin plays, which isn't necessarily how lawful good always is.
From patron Chris Kimball, is there a viable throwing weapons rogue build?
I think you could do it. Unfortunately, throwing weapons have the detriment of needing a bit more of your financial investment compared to other weapons. Unlike a bow, where you can just shoot as many arrows as you want, or a rapier, where you can just swing and thrust with that as often as you like. A throwing weapon is thrown, and then it just clatters to the ground. There it is. Now you have to get another one out. Quick draw is perfect for that kind of thing, but you might have to wait till you've invested in a returning rune on that to make sure you can reliably get the throwing weapon back and keep attacking with it. Or you might just run around with 20 different hatchets on your back that you throw every turn. I think you can do it. There's nothing that says, as Lauren mentioned earlier during the sneak attack breakdown, nothing that says you can't use a throwing weapon so long as it's still agile or finesse. It's just gonna be kind of a pain because the feats aren't there to help you out, and unfortunately there's not any other classes out there right now that are getting the feats to help you out either. You can't say take the fighter dedication and then get that one fighter feat that makes throwing weapons really good. It's just not a thing at the moment.
And something else you're gonna have to consider, that you're always going to be outranged by a lot of the other ranged weapons, like a bow or a crossbow. And they're going to be quote-unquote better for that reason. I don't think that it's so much better that you shouldn't do thrown weapons build. I mean, my Jessie build was a dagger build, so she can hybrid back and forth between throwing them and stabbing people. But that's what you're going to have to lean into when you're doing a good throwing weapons build. You have to be ready to throw a dagger, then walk up and shank someone else with another dagger. If you can't do that, you're not really doing anything with your thrown weapons build that a bow couldn't also do, but from further away.
Okay, and we got to sneak off here now. I think that's all we have the time for at this time.
So make sure you check out the rest of the great content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other content, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/NoDirection.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.
Quiet okay. Phone, quiet animals. I'm running out of coffee, but that's fine. Let me get my throat clear.
Me.
Yeah. All right, we ready?
Yeah.